Mindful Cyborgs, contemplative living in the age of quantification, augmentation, and acceleration. With your hosts, Chris Dancy, Clint Finley, and Sarah Watson.
Welcome to Mindful Cyborgs, the lost episode because it's numberless. Hi, Clint and Sarah.
Hi, Chris.
Big shout out to Tony. I think our most favorite fan. Tony, if you're listening, because you do listen to every show, can you run the community for us? Guys, I've been unplugged for a month. I actually went to a five-day residential retreat with noble silence, so you didn't speak to anyone for 5 days. You also didn't look at anyone. You were allowed no pens or paper, no reading materials. You got up at 5 and you meditated until 9:30, and you ate vegan meals. You couldn't kill any bugs, and you could walk in nature. Let your questions begin now. I'm just kidding.
What motivated you to go on this?
Gosh, what made me go on this? So you guys might remember in January, I read this very heartfelt letter about just this relentless anxiety and what turned out to be some crazy depression that I didn't talk about. So I just talked about the anxiety, but just this depression. And then we had Paul train on the, or Paul Ford on the show. And, you know, I'd up my meditation. I'd gone from maybe someone who maybe meditated, you know, maybe 30 minutes or 40 minutes a week to someone who was, you know, at the beginning of January, I was hitting it hard, maybe an hour a day, to right before retreat, I was up to about 4 hours a day. But I think the trigger was just, I felt every time Clint and I, when we started this show, we talked about this just relentless pull on our attention and our minds and this fear and this anxiety and this worry. And I wanted to see if there was something else, literally, like, is there something else? And I think I figured out the answer.
Do tell.
Yes, I think I know the answer is it's us. We're the break that we're looking for. When I stopped following tech news, like, I can't wait you guys to tell me what's been happening. I just cannot wait to hear what's happened. But like when I stopped paying attention to tech news, I started feeling better. By day two of no devices, which was a really big deal for me, plus no news, you just kind of get into this weird kind of feeling of like uneasiness, and especially when you can't have anything to read, you know, even a book. But by day three, when you start to actually turn inward, and it was a really simple equation. I call it my first law of Dancy's Dukkha's suffering in Pali. But you can only have external compassion equal to your internal compassion. Mm. And when you put on a happy face for the world, you actually withdraw from an account that's already overdrawn. And when you search for information in the world and not in yourself, you withdraw from an account that's already overdrawn. And the only way to replenish your external kindness and your external compassion is to sit. And it builds up this and this beautifulness inside you. It really comes from all that suffering that you've overdrawn. And as you bring kindness and you know, in Pali, the word is metta, or just a general friendliness to yourself. And not just like, oh, you know, I'm a nice guy, but like, oh, this panic is actually nice. There's goodness to it. Sarah, leaving her, you know, deodorant on the counter, or like right in front of me, like, oh, I should get from. There's goodness to that agitation, right? someone cutting you off, right? There's goodness to that. So, you know, to put it simply, the answer for me was not following any information but my own, which is kind of ironic if you think about it. Hmm. So right now I'm good. Thank you for asking.
So does that mean your own information is a lot about what you're sensing, where you are? Is that like the kind of nowness, the presentness?
Yes. So wait, you just hit the finest area of ever. So you know metadata, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about the data, right? But what's all about the metadata, actually? Well, in Pali, the word is metta, right? Which is a general friendliness. When they call it, you know, metta is a type of meditation you can do. It just means, you know, may I feel well? May I feel safe? May I feel kind? May I be at peace? That's just metta, right? But metadata is actually different. So when you look at yourself, right, it's not like how you treat yourself or how you treat your information. It's the friendliness in which you bring to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. It's the unjudgmental.
Exactly. Constant, relentless, unjudgmental act of being with yourself. Mm-hmm. I was literally suffering in January to the point where I think I told both of you personally I wanted to check into a hospital, not exaggerating, just like it'd be easier than deal with, you know, someone finding me in the garage dead, because I was doing anything to distract myself from being. And now I'm really uncomfortable. You know, pain is mandatory. Suffering is completely optional. And I spend a lot of time now just being. But it really started, Sarah, at South by Southwest with you. So I want to thank you for that.
You already had this whole multi-step plan in place, though, right?
Well, it's easy to say that and sound intelligent, wouldn't it? But I'm much too aware to try to pull that off with you two.
How many days was it that you were gone?
So I was on, like, off the grid, technically 4. But then I was in Kauai for 6 days before that with limited electricity and limited connectivity. And then when I came back on, I actually didn't touch my phone for 2 days afterwards because, to be honest with you, when you come off of a silent retreat, it's overwhelming. Mm. It almost feels like a trip. It's like a head trip. The second day I tried to listen to music and I couldn't open a bottle. You literally can't do two things at once. You know they say you can't do two things at once? You actually can't. Mm. So I had to pull my earbuds out, screw the bottle top, and then put my earbuds back in. I went to drink, and I couldn't figure out how to lift. I'm like, okay, wait, pull one earbud out. And it's like, oh, wow. This is really crazy. Yeah.
It's like the ultimate presence, not doing more than one thing at a time.
And being kind to it. Mm-hmm. It's right. It's when you're only doing one thing at once, and you're thinking about all the things you're missing. Or you think all the things you've got to do. That's where the miskindness happens. That's where the compassion is lying. The lying isn't in the striving. It's in the not being okay with striving.
So how much are you going to be doing meditation? Like, will you get back to like 3 hours a day, or is it?
No, I think yesterday I did an hour. Today I'll probably do a half an hour. It's definitely part of my major routine now. Mm-hmm. Just moving forward, I just found it's as important as the exercise has become. It's important as, you know, and I plus ate vegan. You know, someone who knew me 2 years ago, I'd tell you, you know, Clint knew me. I chain smoked. I eat pizza and hamburgers, you know, and now I basically eat vegan and don't smoke and don't drink. So, and I'm going on another retreat in June, and this will be a 14-day retreat, so.
Oh, wow. Another silent one, or?
Yeah. The silence is really what makes it interesting and profound, I think, for me. It was funny because a lot of people couldn't handle it. They would, like, leave after the first day. Or you'd see them avoiding group. But they're in noble silence, you don't look at other people. So you kind of have this general downward gaze about 3 feet in front of you, like where your eyes would be. Mm. Just. Mm-hmm. And the first couple of days, it feels awkward because you don't look up. And then you notice you don't look up when you're sitting, you don't look up when you're walking, you don't look up when you're standing, you don't look up when anything. Then it dawned on me about, you know, toward the end of the retreat, when I looked up one day just to see everyone walking around, it looked just like everyday life, except they weren't holding devices.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And I realized noble silence, we've extended it, but because of electronics, we're basically just, we have digital dukkha now. And dukkha is just suffering in Pali. So we're just suffering through these devices. And that book Clint got me on the Illuminati totally makes sense now. I mean, I totally get it. So I just want to say to both of you, if we never record another show, your work here is done. You guys have helped me profoundly.
Clint, what's that book about?
Oh, it's called Cosmic Trigger by Robert Anton Wilson. It's his memoir of some time, I think in the mid-70s, when he was kind of just having a, what I guess a lot of people would call a nervous breakdown, but for him was kind of a spiritual transformation. And so I think the reason I sent it to Chris, and I think what he was referring to is that there's this concept of going through the Chapel Perilous, and actually I'll let Chris try to explain that again because he's read it more recently than me. It's been, gosh, 13 years or so since I've read it.
Clint literally is 13 years in the future, for those of you who ever, like, why doesn't Clint talk more? Well, he's covered all of this. You just have to go to his blog from a decade ago. Well, Chapel Perilous, so the one part of the book I really liked a lot says, Chapel Perilous, the mysterious entity called I, cannot be located in space-time continuum. It is weightless, odorless, tasteless, undetectable by ordinary instruments. Indeed, like the ego, it is even possible to deny that it is there. Yet, even more like the ego, once inside it, there does not seem to be any way to ever get out again. Unless you suddenly discover that you've been brought into existence by thought and it does not exist outside of thought. Everything you fear is waiting inside the slaving jaws of Chapel Perilous. If you are armed with the wand of intuition, the cup of sympathy, the sword of reason, the pentacle of valor, you will find, legend says, the medicine of metals, the elixir of life, the philosopher's stone, true wisdom, and perfect happiness. That's what the legends always say, but the language of the myth is poetically precise. For instance, if you go into the realm without a sword of reason, you will lose your mind. But at the same time, if you take only the sword of reason without the cup of sympathy, you will lose your heart. So it was just this amazing kind of thing I read after I was with you, Sarah, at South by Southwest, when I went data church at my session. And then I went to Kauai and I read this book by Clint, and then I went on the silent retreat. Had a nervous breakdown on the side of the mountain. We can talk about some other time. And then just said, oh, okay, I'm going to have a nervous breakdown, and I'm okay with that. And just happened, and I'm back. I feel good.
So I was wondering, to go back to your experience, you mentioned, coming back, you can't multitask anymore.
I can. I'm back to...
Okay, you're back to normal.
Well, I wouldn't call it normal.
Right. status quo.
Yeah.
But how has it been coming back? Particularly, do you just find yourself wanting to just go back on retreat, or are you glad you're back?
It was a multi-stage process. So before they release you from retreat, they put you in small groups and allow one of you to talk for a few seconds, just so you can hear a voice. It's kind of jarring, to be honest with you, the first time you hear a voice. And then when you hear your own, it's really weird. And then, you get in a car with a friend, and there's jokes that once you leave retreat, a lot of people get pulled over for driving too slow. it's just amazing. And the other thing was, deer just walk up to you at retreat. It's the whole place is just weirdly connected. When I first, within an hour, because it's about an hour outside of the Golden Gate Bridge in Woodacre, you feel slightly just maybe unsure, and like the cars feel extra fast. But I'll be completely transparent. The first thing I noticed when I started looking up at other people, including the person who was driving me, was, I don't know how to say it without sounding really bad, but this profound sadness that everyone is truly suffering. They're so busy. I know busy is an overused word, but they're so distracted, I think, is a much better word. There's, back to the distraction addiction that Pang talked about. That you just see the pain in their expressions. You see the frustration and angst in their search for answers. I was on the side of a hill when I had this massive panic attack. I was 40 minutes from the main place, and I knew, I was like, I'm going to die here on the side of the mountain, just like I thought I was going to die every other time I had a panic attack, right? But then you find out, I couldn't have a wrist I could tap on to see my heart rate. I didn't have my phone I could look up a symptom or look up a video of someone having symptoms and kind of have that check me back out. I couldn't distract myself. I couldn't talk to someone. There's no one to talk to. And I was on the side of a hill. So I literally had to just come to terms with, there's a scene when Buddha is enlightened in Mara, which is, for lack of a better way of describing it to a non-Buddhist people, it's just this the suffering, the burdens, the thoughts, the busy mind. We'll just call it Mara. So Mara comes back to Buddha. He's already been enlightened. And you'll see this pose of Buddha sometimes in statues where he's sitting, in lotus position. His one hand's across his waist, and his second hand is just draped over his leg with his hand touching the ground. And Buddha says in the story that, I know you, Mara. Right? So his mind comes back. He's already enlightened, and Mara comes back 40 times. And finally he says, I know you, Mara. You're not of the earth. I am of the earth. So coming back online to your question is, you see people and you see their you see their dukkha, you see their suffering, you see their Mara, you see them interrupt for the sake of interrupting, you see them strive to find answers, when literally it's as cliche as the answers are inside you. All of them, not some of them. You don't need more money. You don't need more people paying attention to you. You don't need more Twitter followers. You certainly don't need more information. And then once you realize that, it's just this profound compassion you start to have for other people. And then slowly you start to act like them. And then slowly you start to multitask. And then I'm on day 5 now. So my house is a mess. My house has never been a mess, but I just don't care. So some parts of it linger. Like some of it, you're just like, I'll get to it when I get to it. But my favorite line the whole retreat, besides I know you, Mara, is nowhere to go, no one to be, nothing to do. Nowhere to go, no one to be, nothing to do. And you can feel the peacefulness in it.
That's great.
I finally felt like a mindful cyborg, and all I had to do was take away anything electronic, including books.
I was going to say, so you had none of your, like, sensors, none of your devices, like, nothing?
No. It was like going I've never been to an inner city high school, but like they show you on TV and stuff where they make kids empty out their pockets. No, they just take everything from you. And with me, it was funny. It was just like, oh my gosh, like when the TSA first got enacted and they'd like basically strip search you. But like I said, it was neat watching people just come unglued, right? Who did not even know what they were getting into because it was like a beginner's retreat. And just by the second day, they just never went to group. You always saw them in their room or just hiding on trails, you know. But as a good mindfulness practitioner I am, I know that this too shall pass. this feeling of being okay and just feeling okay with myself and this general friendliness towards myself. But I think it's important that we do start to think about data and the concept of metta and not meta. Because friendliness towards it really, while it takes away all objectivity, it actually makes it easier to deal with. The search for precision is actually cutting us to death.
Well, I liked that there was something about the observation and the tools for observation or something in the quote you read, Chris.
Finely tuned instruments, they calls them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. I have to go back, everything Clint's ever set me through the years, Clint is just a visionary of visionaries. But it's just amazing because it's just like, oh, that's what he meant. Mm-hmm. This is why Clint doesn't say much. He said it all.
I very much doubt that. But, that book is, that book's older than I am, The Cosmic Trigger. And I mean, even that's drawing on stuff that's much, much older than Robert Anton Wilson was. So I can't take much credit for any of that.
Well, it got me reading the other book by Crawley, the one with all the secrets in it. Oh, no, I can't remember the name of it. Crawley has this book he published was apparently the secret of the Illuminati.
Yeah, he was kind of a charlatan, but
well, they reference it, so I just went and
looked. Be fun to read.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. I mean they definitely pull on a bunch of stuff. But my favorite thing about all this kind of stuff is, and then I just picked up this book on synchronicity because I think we've talked about it on the show. I'm experiencing vast amounts of synchronicity on almost a moment by moment basis. Some days it's not deja vu; it's literally synchronicity. There's no way this is happening right now. And, it's this weird instance where, even in quantum physics, there's this, you can't explain how these things happen, but there's proof that they do, right? They're not, you can't see the connections, but the entanglement of it all. But it, there has to be a reason. There has to be an explanation. And the only other way I can see is maybe to go to the occult or a metaphysical realm to explain things that look like there's just too coincidental. And I think we're starting to see this in apps like you both use Time Hop or you both have been exposed to Time Hop. You both have been exposed to memoir. Facebook, I think right before I went away and introduced, your memories to you. So they give you back this day and time.
Right.
We're going to start seeing these massive synchronicity cycles where, oh, this is exactly what happened a year ago, or this happened and that happened, and you can see it. But I can tell you from year six, I knew this. I mean, I could see those cycles for myself. It's one thing to see a photo from a year ago that kind of lines up to a place in a photo from today. It's another thing to see your bowel movement, right? I don't mean to be garish, but when you measure everything like I do, the synchronicity is wicked. In greasing those wheels, you actually start to need something like an occult belief or a mindfulness practice to actually not make you come apart.
The reason I like those apps and those kind of views on the world is like, this is where I've been and this is where I'm going. And like, it actually helps to center where I am right now.
Boom.
To kind of do that reflection. I mean, that was what being at South by Southwest was amazing for me because I was getting all these time hops of where we had been and, the first couple times I went in like 2010 and 2011, and those were like really significant moments to me in like setting off on the career change that I was kind of undertaking. And to be back there and to be back in the same place, to be literally back at the same table at Frank's, remember, Chris, I had this like incredibly uncanny moment of saying like, whoa, this is where I was. And it was actually that same day when like Time Hop shows you that. And so I think on the one hand, you can have those memories and say like, yeah, I was at this table. That's funny. That's weird. But I think it's even a little bit stranger and more uncanny when you have this technology that can show you exactly it was in fact that same day and not just, over the course of South by Southwest. So
yeah, I things are going to get very interesting in the next couple of years. I once said on the show maybe that I think Ray Kurzweil was right. There is going to be a singularity, but we are going to wake up. Mm. He was right. There is going to be a rise of intelligence that far exceeds man's, but I think it is us.
Will that be a good thing or a bad thing?
So back to my Dancy's Law of Dukkha. It really depends on what you do with that compassion. You can become very aware and then weaponize that information. I mean, that's the first thing kind of I really was sure of after a retreat. I talk of weaponization of information constantly when I'm on stage. Patients do it to doctors. People with fitness do it to each other. You know, some people call it a gamification, but when you get in like very precise numbers, it's weaponization. It's enrichment and weaponization of information. You see it with how people read internet articles, right? Oh, that's from last week. I'm not even bothering, right? Oh, that's from 2 hours ago. There must be something newer. So I think what would be a good thing or a bad thing really comes on the kindness you bring to the feeling you have when you feel you have to use information. When you use information to crush someone, when you have that level of awareness, that's not right in Buddhism, right speech. And that's there's no way to do that, right? But I think if you use it to be kind to yourself, which allows you to be kind to other people, then I think it's a good thing for humanity. But you know, I don't think there's this general benevolent awakening where we all are in this utopia. I think it looks a lot more like the Matrix.
We're getting into red pill, blue pill territory.
Yeah. They're going to look back on that movie. So we got to cut this show short. It became the Chris show. I'm so sorry. But we'll be back next week, and we'll catch up on the news and figure out what's going on, and you guys tell me who you've had on and everything else, because we do 20-minute shows and like to stop. So thanks, guys. Thank you for letting me go on for all that time about my experience.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
All right. Namaste.
Namaste.
Peace.